Alaska ballot measure 1 asks, shall there be a constitutional convention? To help our listeners as they prepare to vote in the November 8th election, KCAM presents a recent debate on that question between Bob Byrd and John Coghill. This edited half-hour version is presented by permission of Radio Kenai.
Bob Byrd will debate for the yes side. He wrote the ballot statement for yes. A retired secondary and collegiate teacher, radio talk show host, political columnist, and twice a candidate for the U.S. Senate, he is currently chairman of the Alaskan Independence Party, holds a master's degree in history, and is a recognized constitutional scholar and sports broadcaster. John Coghill will debate for the no side. Coghill co-wrote the ballot statement for no. Is a lifelong Alaskan and son of one of Alaska's original convention delegates in 1955, the late Lieutenant Governor Jack Coghill Sr. John Jr. is himself a former majority leader in the Alaskan State Senate. Coghill is a known conservative, Christian pastor, who has lived in the Fairbanks area most of his life. He is director of the Fairbanks Rescue Mission. Byrd and Coghill debated in February this year, where it is archived at the Alaskan Watchman homepage. They are friends. As is usual in debating formats, we will now open with the yes side, Mr. Bob Byrd.
The two of us truly hold a completely unselfish and altruistic reason for this, and that is we want the people of Alaska to hear the points on both sides of this important issue and let them think for themselves. We have lost confidence in most of our hallowed institutions. Can we trust medicine, science, religion, the military, academia, journalism? All of these institutions have come under, a cloud that we just cannot trust them anymore. We certainly cannot trust Congress and even our own legislature. They have all been compromised, and they've been turned on their heads, and we are sliding towards something terrible. We are being manipulated with global dirty tricks, coordinated to a fine degree. While few admit it publicly, few will deny it privately. So what's left? Well, there's the people. If there's any scrap of decency left in human society, we must find it within ourselves right now. Our Constitution ought to have been reviewed more often. It has virtues, yes, both major and minor virtues, but it has to be admitted it has major and minor flaws. The minor ones could have been easily fixed with a bipartisan consensus, such as an amendment, or to simply call the convention perhaps 10 or 20 years ago and do the house cleaning, the dusting of the shelves. But if this dust is allowed to accumulate, it then becomes a threat to our health. John has said, and he's correct, that every vote for a constitutional convention has drawn the attention of no one. It usually is defeated something like 65% to 35%. But it is time to understand the truth. The major flaw is that the template of our socialist constitution was crafted by socialists and for socialists. It came out of the Public Administration Service, or PAS. It was a liberal think tank at the Rockefeller-founded and funded University of Chicago. Bob Atwood, who was a revered founder of statehood and editor of the Anchorage Times, found what he thought was probably an apparently easy answer. The Public Administration Service gave him a template, which probably he hoped would be a skeleton for Alaskans to add muscle and brains. And to some extent, we certainly did. But the PAS advisors were brought to Alaska, spoke to the delegates in official sessions, observed the proceedings, and undoubtedly gave their advice. Now, to say that we have a socialist constitution, let's check the evidence. Tell me if it holds up. Unlike the lower 48, Alaskans do not have subsurface mineral rights. But who does? The state. Land ownership by the government is the very definition of socialism. We cannot control the courts because of this judicial council system. Having intractable courts is socialism. We were forced to accept Article 12, Section 12. It's a poison pill which gave the federal government control of properties that are arguably unconstitutional. And that is at least 65% of the state that is owned by the federal government. With 25% going to the state, and John can correct me, I don't think we have taken all of our options yet with that. And of course, 10% by native corporations who receive billions of dollars in federal contracts. How much of Alaska is in private hands? 1%. That is socialism. When you look at the maps of the states west of the Rockies compared to the ones east of the Rockies, you'll see the shocking difference. Even Walter Hickel identified Alaska as the owner's state. Well, but that, by any definition, is socialism. And also, we have the permanent fund dividend. The permanent fund dividend was seen as a compensation for all this property that keeps the people from either owning or being able to use subsurface mineral rights. I submit that the Constitutional Convention is no threat. Good ideas will survive and bad ones will shrivel inside of the process. But they must be submitted for discussion by and through the people, not elected officials, who constantly have an eye on re-election. And whatever emerges will probably be only a fraction of what probably needs to be done. Few victories worth fighting for are easily won, and we should expect that. Here are my top priorities. We need to constitutionalize the permanent fund dividend. It is not going to be anything but raided by the legislature with impunity unless we put this into the Constitution. We must discard the judicial council system to one that is more directly responsible to the people. There's no question there are different options here. Next, we need to dare to challenge federal properties in Alaska that are not authorized by either the Statehood Act or the federal constitution. Without this, we can never be economically self-sufficient. We must define personhood. Without this, no one's life is secured. Already, common law, from centuries of practice, recognizes the unborn child as having property rights. But to say he doesn't have human rights is putting the question on its head. If we cannot define personhood, we must turn the compromise over to the elected officials. But we certainly don't want the judges being the ones who make this decision. They are, in fact, political creatures themselves, and they will make sure that their own personal philosophy, without any accountability, is going to trump any efforts to define the personhood of all humanity. Then we have the incredible problem of election integrity. Not have three co-equal branches of government. The legislature is supreme, the executive enforces the law, and the courts interpret it. But the courts cannot cancel, write, modify, or rewrite the law. The executive's oath can and must be used to intercept judicial overthrow. And this is found in Article 3, Section 16, but it is not used because it's not clearly understood. Courts cannot identify or concoct new rights like they did in the Valley Hospital case. They actually overthrew the right of the legislature and the right of the people to make a constitutional amendment with this wording. Quote, "We are under a duty to develop additional constitutional rights and privileges under our Alaska Constitution if we find such fundamental rights and privacy to be within the intention and spirit of our local constitutional language and to be necessary for the kind of civilized life in ordered liberty which is at the core of our constitutional heritage. That's how they overthrew the right to amend the Constitution. They overthrew the governor's line item veto. They overthrew the legislature's ability to override the governor's veto. They seized from the legislature the right to define the parameters of privacy. And that is Article 1, Section 22. Those are impeachable offenses. We wouldn't be here if there was will within the legislature to do that. It is time now to rein in the judiciary through a constitutional convention of the will of the people.
You're listening to the debate over the ballot initiative. Shall there be a constitutional convention? With the opening statement for the no side, here is Mr. Coghill.
So first off, I remain unconvinced that a constitutional convention is the right thing to do. But man, is it tough talking to Bob because so many things him and I agree on. So even though we come to different conclusions, in many ways, him and I do carry the same heart, not only for Alaska, but for good constitutional law. And so I'm going to start kind of where he started, and that is the confidence in our institutions has slipped significantly in our generation. And that's a sad fact. There's two sides to that. One is political and one is social. Let me start with the social a little bit, because in America, from the Second World War till now, we have slowly slipped into a position where at one point we were saying, in God we trust wholeheartedly. Now it seems like we have to say it quietly. And that has been partly political, partly judicial, but it's been in a big part social as well. And some of it has been because of court hearings. I get that. And so that's the social part of it. We've had people, whether it's the ACLU or just name the group that wants to sue and sue and sue and use our court system, but they also use everything from our public media to our social websites now, or social media as we call it. So let's just take a look at the social situation we're in Alaska, and in America, quite frankly, but Alaska specifically. In our preamble to our Constitution, we have, "We the people of Alaska, grateful to God and the people who pioneered this great state." I just challenge you to think for a second. Could we get that in the preamble to our Constitution, should we have a constitutional convention, knowing that just the mention of God sometimes in public is a challenge? So I'm just saying, I like the way we say it now, and there's some protections on our religious liberties that I'm not willing to put on the table at this point in our history, mostly because of the social atmosphere that we live in. So as much as I agree with Bob on many of those issues, you still have to, at the end of the day, you have to count what the votes are like in Alaska. So the Democrats, during the last presidential election, actually came in unanimously for a socialist. So we have that as a backdrop. And then the vast majority of voters are nonpartisan, undeclared. Some are libertarian, and I guess I have a libertarian streak in me, quite frankly. But if you think about the social atmosphere, it's just leave me alone and do what you want to do. But then you have those who I would call the ACLU-type libertarians, who want to force you to believe what they believe. And that's whether it's in our school system. Like you said, our institutions have slipped significantly. Even our Environmental Protection Agency has become weaponized against the very production that we would like to do in our state. And that would be true whether we have a constitutional convention or not. That is a mood that is going through our whole society right now. So I'm just challenging people to think through those kinds of things would come in to Alaska in a huge way, I think very forcefully. So I'm just saying to people, take a look around, look at the surroundings. When you go out hunting or fishing, you check the weather, you look at your surroundings, you do it as safely as you can. That is not a fear tactic. That's wisdom being prepared for what's coming your way. And so I know that many people think that I am causing people to fear. That's not my game. My goal is to think people, to have people think as wisely as we can about, look at the surroundings, look at what you got available, check your vote counts. So, but politically, I think we need to look at that too. As a representative democracy, our state legislature right now is probably a fairly decent representation of the state of Alaska. People choose their representatives, their senators, their governor, and it's a pretty decent representation. And within that, you see some huge variances. People call it polarization. Certainly, there are strong viewpoints on either side. I don't see that that would be a significant change if we went into a convention, an arena. First of all, you know as well as I do that the process would be the legislature now, newly elected as it comes up, if they are given the yes vote and they have to kind of figure out what do we do with a constitutional convention, they will have to decide how will that go. Where will it be? What would be the process of electing those delegates? So that will take this legislature, who people say is highly polarized, and for the last few years, it's demonstrated that. That political atmosphere, if you will, to me, just seems too intense for the noble effort of a constitutional convention. When we put the one together, flawed as it is, it was decades of single-minded wanting to be a statehood. That wanted to be a state. They wanted statehood. Part of it was they wanted representation in Congress. They were certainly getting taxed, but they were not being represented. So that was their primary move, to make their voice count in Congress. To become a state, they conceded in a statehood act that they would use the resources of their state to run the state. You can argue that it's socialist, but that's what we agreed to. Do you think we would change that now with Congress the way it is, with the state the way it is, with the economy that we've built on that? I don't see that happening. But I do see the political polarization being just as intense with that constitutional convention. And then there's an economic issue that I think we need to think about, ladies and gentlemen. Think about if you start arguing in the legislature how and where you would put a convention together. You have the convention. Then in years you have maybe some litigation, but certainly there's a ratification process. So you have at least 3, maybe 4 years of an economy that may very well stay on hold while people are deciding what we're going to be fundamentally, whether that's the dividend, whether that's the judiciary, whether that's the land management, forest management, game management, fish management. All those will be questions that we'll have to answer. It could be that we just take the template of this Constitution, modify it a little bit, and we're good. But it may also be that the land management would be up for questions, which would hugely impact the resources, quite frankly, the economy, and the investment in our economy throughout years of litigation for investment. So I think at this point, I'm just not in favor of us putting a document on the table in the political climate, the social climate, and the economic potential for a very thin economy in Alaska. So that's my primary reason for saying I'm not ready for it yet.
For the next 5 minutes, Mr. Byrd will ask Mr. Coghill questions, and Mr. Coghill will answer. After 5 minutes, another five-minute session will follow where Mr. Coghill will ask Mr. Byrd questions.
John, my first question is, we cannot continue with the Alaska Judicial Council. It is incestuous. It is rigged. It is damaging justice, John. It is damaging justice. We can't have an overarching liberal philosophy by the judiciary when there are plenty of times where we have had conservative majorities both in both houses and also with conservative governors. And to my way of thinking, John, if the legislature fails to change this, they are the ones responsible forcing a constitutional convention because they have proven that they are calcified or petrified, one or the other, and do not care for this. And so, to my way of thinking, John, things are so bad with the fact that the Constitution has been overthrown, John, by the judiciary. I don't think you deny that. And the legislature ought to have impeached them. They did not. And so this is the bed that they have made, and the people are mad about it. And they're mad about the PFD. But I'm going to use the judiciary here simply because of that commercial, which you missed. But I don't know. But, John, you tell me how. We're not going to get a magic wand to change the judicial council system.
It is true. The judicial council is a tough one to crack. And it is true the legislature should act on that. It's too much like a cartel in many ways, where you said incestuous, I call it a cartel because there's a power base. There is some light that we can shed on it through the governor and through the legislature and through those who are public members. But that doesn't seem enough. And in my view, the first thing we should do is take the Supreme Court justice off the tie vote, at the very least, take them off the tie vote so that we could change that. The thing about that is, Bob, you're probably not going to change what comes through the legal schools, who the lawyers are, and who the selection base is. That's probably the social problem that we're going to struggle with for our generation and beyond. And I don't know that if we change the Constitution to do that, to change the way we selected them, that we would change who gets to be part of the selection. But I will tell you this, if the people of Alaska want to do that, I'm with them, because to me, that will be one of the key issues, because it falls to the right to life issue, and it falls to many other judicial issues in our state where the legislature has not been able to act. But remember, Bob, the legislature is the voice of the people. When we say all power resides in the people, it's a representative democracy. They elect their representatives, and Alaska has not been able to answer the judicial question for many years. Now, I've been a part of trying to change it, and I can tell you, right up to the last, you get a couple of votes, and it fades. People will fade on you. But that may very well be true if we take it to a constitutional convention.
Well, John,
polarization.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Don't you think, because is not the vote no side arguing against itself? Because you have just identified the fact that we have a representative a House and Senate, and yet because the Founding Fathers, and your dad was one of them, realized that we might someday be at an impasse like this, that then the Constitutional Convention option is there for the people to make the corrections. And so
I don't disagree with you, Bob.
Yeah.
I think it does belong to the people. This Constitution belongs to the people of Alaska. The question that I have is, will the people of Alaska be able to manage this constitutional convention in the most noble way without the political polarization that we live in our day?
John, I'm going to let you ask questions of me.
So, Bob, you make so many good arguments, but the Statehood Compact is one of the things that just I think, drives both you and me crazy. But how do we get to private property without changing our statehood compact, which goes to the federal government? And so have you thought through that and what our constitutional convention might actually be able to do about that?
I have, John. It's a great question. All right? So long ago, you might remember that we actually passed a referendum, shall Alaska reassess its relationship with the federal government? Do you remember that?
True, very well.
And it went nowhere because they just wrung their hands and said something like, well, we got to make sure we have a strong congressional delegation and a president who makes good appointments to the Interior Secretary. Of course, that's no solution simply because officials come and go. So we had an opportunity there expressed by the people to do something that the state did not. The state ought to have said, when ANILCA came through, the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, whoa, what about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the federal constitution, where it limits the federal government to own the District of Columbia, forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So we have a situation, once again, where this was too hot or too controversial for the legislature to say, how is it that Alaska has to obey its constitution, but the federal government does not? So when you have a situation where the legislature fails to make the challenge, because the federal government is not going to say, oh, we're sorry, we've been violating the Constitution. Maybe we ought to try to obey it now. The process, John, I know, will not be liked by the federal government, will not be accepted by the federal government. The process is not going to happen just with a constitutional convention, but it is going to finally make the point, if we dare to question the constitutionality of most of the federal lands, then that's going to change the entire landscape. There will be Western states who will very well join us, like they did in the Tundra and Sagebrush Rebellion of the 70s and 80s, to once again understand that I can't speak for the Western states, but I know it's true for us, because they've got agriculture. We have very little of it. We are an extraction-based economy. We will forever be languishing unless we get control of our lands and our resources. And so the process begins. It's probably not going to be solved in a constitutional convention, but it begins by daring to tell the federal government, whoa, you start obeying the Constitution.
I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. I'll just give you a quick answer. I don't think there's the will to do that in Alaska, mostly because of the economic realities of the federal impact in Alaska.
All I can say is, John, I don't know how things can get worse. That's why I'm willing to take the risk. And I guess maybe that's the essential difference that we have.
Yeah. And I see the time with the global climate change, the LGBTQ issue, the many other social issues that have taken on huge political movements nationally and internationally, Bob. And I think that they would come running in on us, the National Wildlife Federation, you know. And I'm ashamed that I'm even a part of one group that actually has dark money coming in, but I can tell you, I think that's light compared to what would come in. And if I had a fear, and I don't want to be fear-mongering, but you just look at the landscape and you think, I don't know that I want them coming in. And do we have the will to stand up to that, the 700,000 of us, you know? I'm struggling with it.
Here's how we resist that, John. And I had a great question on the half hour before you came on the air. The question was, how are we going to choose the delegates? And if we have the delegates chosen by the precinct caucus method, we will avoid having the influence of dark money that would pour into campaigns for delegates, where you have to buy advertisements on radio, TV, and online, and yard signs. We don't want that. That will not, and we're going to run out of time. That's what that music means, John. And hopefully, the questioners will allow us to elaborate on it. You can close here.
All right. I agree with you on the precinct style. Otherwise, we're lost.
This debate on the Alaska Constitutional Convention ballot measure is presented by permission of Radio Kenai.